where were you when World War I broke out? Well, you probably weren't born. Maybe a few of our listeners were small children and remember hearing something about the war over there. But for the rest of us, we need a museum. And fortunately, we have one. I'm Brian Ellison. Today on Central Standard, we get a sneak peek at the National World War I Museum's plans for observing the centennial of the war to end all wars. It began 100 years ago next summer. We'll find out some of their plans and ask how to bring something that few of us actually remember to life for a new generation. Then we take a look at the successful completion of one of the Chamber of Commerce's Big Five goals for the region. An international symposium solidified the metro's place on the world stage of animal health. We'll hear about that and the Chamber's other plans for making Kansas City better. It's all ahead on Central Standard after the news. It was known as the Great War, even the war to end all wars, even though, of course, it didn't. What it did do is cost 9 million lives, devastate Europe, and draw in the world's great powers of the day. As of next summer, that day will be exactly 100 years ago, which means it's time to remember. But how do you remember something that no one alive can remember? Kansas City has an answer. Good morning. Welcome to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. Our town is home to the National World War I Museum, of course, and plans are just getting underway for what will be 5 years of commemoration, scholarship, and conversation around the centennial of the Great War. That includes the hiring of just this month of new staff to head up the effort and to start making plans and putting them into action. Joining us to help us remember and understand how that remembering will happen is Matthew Naylor. He's president and CEO of the museum. Matt, good morning.
Morning.
Good to have you here. You're pretty new to the museum yourself. How have these first 6 months gone?
Yeah, well, I'm getting my sea legs, I guess.
Yes.
What I'm able to say. It's what a fantastic museum. What a great place to be. And I couldn't be happier. And the staff are terrific. An extraordinary collection. So I'm just delighted to be here.
I think most listeners know the museum's located there at the Liberty Memorial, open to the public. How many visitors a year come to see it?
Sure. We would have in excess of 150,000 into the museum. And then there are many people who just enjoy the grounds and the memorial itself. So perhaps another 150,000 to 200,000 on the grounds.
Is it one of those places where people who live in town often live here for a long time without ever visiting, and many of your visitors are from out of town?
Yeah, that's often the case. You know, I like to spend time talking to visitors in the cafe or in the exhibition gallery or outside on the grounds, and it's often people will say that they didn't realize it was here, whereas others say it's the place to bring their out-of-town guests, and they love to do that.
Yeah, and it's been the nation's official World War I museum since 2004. It opened in 2006. Has there been anything like what's coming up with these centennial celebrations up until now?
Well, you know, the opening was really dramatic and really important for Kansas City. To have the nation's World War I museum here is really important. But the centennial gives us a really extraordinary opportunity to be able to tell a compelling story, for the spotlight to turn on Kansas City, and for the National World War I Museum to be able to contribute to that.
And when you say it's the nation's World War I Museum, that was Congress's designation. What does that bring to the museum? Does that mean there's a whole lot of government funding pouring into the museum?
Well, that's one of the things it doesn't bring. I think one of the things it does is, you know, Kansas City has extraordinary civic pride. And then for Kansas City, for us to have firstly created the memorial in 1921, then 1926 when the memorial was opened, and then to, on its own initiative, create the museum, which then was designated as the nation's museum, this is pretty significant for Kansas City. And so it doesn't bring any funds with it. We're funded by generous people in Kansas City and nationally by foundations. And so, you know, we're grateful for that, need that support, and we don't receive any federal funding.
So one of the ways the museum is preparing for the centennial is with a new hire. And joining us is the newly hired Director of Strategic Engagement, Linda Trout. Welcome to you, Linda.
Thank you.
So you are no stranger to Kansas City. You've been here for a while. You were head of the International Relations Council. What draws you to this very different role?
Well, in a way, I'm continuing the same kind of things. The International Relations Council worked to educate Kansas City about the world, about international affairs, about the important issues. And what we are going to be doing at the World War One Museum is continuing to bring those issues into today, the issues that were important as a result of World War One, the things that happened as a result of the first global war continue to resonate today and continue to be important today. And so I'm hoping to help highlight those issues in the context of the commemoration.
So give us an example of that. What's an issue that resonates in today's international conversations that you think you can find something important in 1914?
There are so many. I hardly know which one to choose. Just as a couple of examples, the country of Syria. The borders were outlined as a result of World War One, and Syria is in our news every day right now. The country of Iraq was the borders were outlined as a result of World War One, and of course, Iraq has been an important part of the world.
The League of Nations that came together to form those countries, not necessarily naturally allies, but were drawn by the international community.
Exactly. And part of the border of Syria, when the victors in World War One were dividing the spoils, as it were, they changed the lines because oil was discovered right at that time. And those kind of things continue to resonate today. And understanding where those started and how those happened is very important in understanding the world that we have today.
You know, you've been entrusted with a pretty significant role at a really amazing time in the museum's life. It's hard to imagine a more significant period than the centennial celebration. In addition to sort of fomenting that dialogue you're talking about, those comparisons between today's political realities and 100 years ago, what are your other hopes and goals for this celebration? What do you hope to have happen during these next 5 years?
Well, the title I have been given is Director of Strategic Engagement, and that's exactly what I'm going to be working on, is connecting a lot of the groups and organizations, both locally, regionally, and internationally, nationally, that have parts of this, and helping them to work with our museum to look at those issues and see how we can all be connected.
Yeah.
Brian, I couldn't think of a better person than Linda to work with us. The museum during this period has two fundamental roles. The first is to help derive lessons and meaning from World War One that influences us today and tomorrow. And the second is to commemorate and remember. And so we have a whole suite of activities building around that. But something else important is happening, and that is that people of goodwill around the world are saying to us, how can we partner with you? And so having Linda on board enables us to identify those key opportunities where then we're able to maximize those partnerships for the benefit of this project of deriving meaning and learning lessons, and also commemorating and remembering, and also it helps elevate Kansas City on the world stage. So Linda is particularly well situated to be a partner with us in this work.
We're also joined today by Doran Cart, who's a senior curator at the museum. Linda, I understand, has been on the job a little over a week. Doran, how long have you been at the World War One Museum?
I've been there 23 years, Brian.
All right. Well, then let's talk a little bit about history and about what will be remembered next year. Remind the armchair, or not even that much, historians out there, how did World War One start in 1914?
Well, that's the loaded question. That's been debated ever since the war started. How it really started, we know, but why it started is still being debated. It was a combination of many factors, international arms races, old nations that were controlling the world, new nationalism developing, colonial holdings revolting against their old emperors in Europe, and this whole idea, and Linda mentioned it earlier, this change of power, really, especially among the fleets, from coal to oil, and where was the oil being discovered and who was controlling that. And so a lot of those factors went into it. But then you had the event on June 28, 1914, with the assassination of the Austrian Archduke Franz Ferdinand, his wife Sophie, by a Bosnian Serb nationalist. And that was really a political assassination. And that was not the cause of the war, but it was one of the sparks to the war.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM, streaming live at kcur.org. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking about the National World War I Museum here in Kansas City and about the ways that it will commemorate the centennial of World War I, which, of course, began 100 years ago next June. I'm talking with Matt Naylor, who's CEO and president of the museum, as well as Linda Trout, their new director of strategic engagement, who's spearheading these conversations, and Doran Cart, a senior curator at the museum. Matt Naylor, how much does the museum, how well can the museum display the complexity of causes behind something as complicated as the war?
In 2006, the museum was opened, and the people who came together, the citizens who came together to create the museum, chose the very best museum designers in the world. And so the museum tells a rich global story, unlike other museums of its kind. Most are pretty parochial, tell a national story. We tell a global story. So it's told in a very compelling way. One of the things that strikes me is that if you're not really a history buff, you can go into the museum and get an overview of what happened in a really engaging way with lots of interactives for kids as well as for adults. If you're a real history buff, you can spend days in there and come back again and again seeing new things with the remarkable artifacts which are on display with terrific interactives as well. So it tells a very rich story. As well as that, then we have temporary exhibitions. And during the commemorative period, we have quite a number of those planned and planned for a new exhibition space to take traveling exhibitions as well.
And we do want to talk about some of those exhibitions. Doran, the special exhibitions aside, is there an overarching lesson or a message that you think the war and the museum's exploration of the war have to tell today's generation? What's the story you tell in your role as senior curator?
Well, I think we really tell what happened to the humanity. And everything that really has occurred since then has been based upon how the world was affected by the war. And our guides through the museum and through our main exhibitions and our special exhibitions are the people who were there. And as you mentioned at the beginning, there are no veterans left from World War I. There are still people who were born during that time but don't remember much about that period. And we try to show the relevance of how those people reacted to the situations and to the environment that was around them, and how the lessons that we can draw from them today.
Well, let's invite our listeners to share their memories, quote-unquote memories, since they may not remember it themselves. But how do you remember World War I? Is it stories of parents or grandparents? Is it family photos? Is it visits to the World War I Museum? Call us at 816-235-2888, 235-2888. 88. If you have been a regular or maybe even a one-time visitor to the museum, what stood out to you? What left an impression? 816-235-2888 to share your memories of World War I, or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Linda Trout, obviously many of these plans have been underway for a while already. Can you tell us some of the specific plans, some of the ways you know the museum plans to commemorate and observe this centennial?
Well, one of the things that's going to start, I know, is the day after Christmas. We're going to have a special Celebrating the Truth soccer event. And with the Sporting KC just winning the MLS Cup on Saturday, it's going to be very interesting. There's going to be soccer matches and watching the screen. So this is starting right away. And, you know, in 1918, I think, yeah. Or 1917, I'm not sure which year, there was the Christmas truce.
Yeah, tell us about the Christmas truce. That's a story that let me ask Doran to tell us. And Doran, I'll tell you, I'm a minister in my other life, and I've told this story on Christmas Eve sermons before, so it's a well-known story in certain communities. What's the true story?
Well, the Christmas of 1914, that's all right, we
1914.
Yeah, 1914. There was a small area in Flanders and France between the lines, and the lines were very close at this time after the entrenching had started in the fall of 1914. And we don't really know exactly how it started because there's a lot of mythology that's grown up around it. But some German soldiers actually started singing Silent Night in German. And a lot of them had been workers in England before the war. They've been worked in hotels and in businesses in England and knew that there were English and Scottish troops across from them as well as French troops. And it was really more of the kind of communicating through song about the spirit of what the day meant. The British troops responded, and in various points where they were very close, they did actually leave the trenches, which was a really daring thing to do because they'd been fighting right up to that point. There were small meetings at first, and then they grew larger. And this happened at various places. It wasn't all in the same place. And it didn't happen in other places. There was continued to fight along with that. The officers never liked it. They put an end to it as soon as they knew it was occurring. But there was a sharing of food, cigars, and a camaraderie that they knew would not last.
Yeah, this was early in the war, 1914, then, that would go on many years after. Matt?
So part of the story, too, is that, or at least part of the mythology, is that soccer was played on some of those locations. So what better partner than Sporting KC for the National World War I Museum to have the truce tournament then on December 26? So the three-on-three sides, smaller fields. We're going to have 8 fields set up on our south lawn, a watch party inside, beer, thanks to Boulevard, and eggs, as is the traditional food for watch parties with Sporting. People can go to the Sporting KC website to sign up for the Truce Tournament, which is on December 26. A great beginning for us to tell an important story of how people were responding to war.
That's great. We'll hope we get some better weather for than the last few days. You know, it's an interesting thing. I have to think, though, that that running a museum about something that is so long ago, so much not a part of people's daily thinking, the constant challenge is how do you make this fresh? And, of course, drawing in a professional soccer team might be one way to do that. Matt, how else do you do it? How do you really bring something that really is history to life?
Sure. So I think there's a variety of ways that we do that, Brian. One of the things that we'll be looking forward to in the latter part of next year is an Italian war photography exhibition. So it tells the story of how did the Italians respond to war. And this particular exhibition is going to be telling a larger story about how art was protected during those years. That's one of the ways that we tell a story. Another is through food. For example, we're going to be having a series of programs that we're calling Food Fight that talks about the culinary experience during war. On Veterans Day, we had themed food in our cafe, and more than 600 people had things like trench stew and chipped beef. Now, why did we do that?
Which does not sound especially pleasant, but all right.
I tell you, people enjoyed it.
Okay.
Part of the story is there. It's a way of people accessing the experience of what happened during those years. And so what we seek to do is to, as Doran has said, and as he works every day with other of the team, in being able to uncover story about what happened during the life of people during those years and how they continue to impact us today. PTSD is another one of those examples. Now, the treatment of veterans as people came out of World War One are very similar types of experiences. Shell shock, we called it then. Mm-hmm. PTSD, we call it today. What happens to veterans after war is a critical conversation. So us engaging in those types of discussions is another way in which then we will be exploring this during the 5 years.
Linda Trout, in your previous role, you dealt with international leaders, with people from all over the world. Do you hope to have some international presence for these celebrations?
Absolutely. We have a lot. We have nothing specific, but we have a lot of great plans, and we would hope to have many of the world leaders come and talk about a relationship between the issues of World War I and what they faced in their role as leaders over the past decade and into the future. And we hope to have an ongoing series dealing with just those issues.
And how is the world getting involved in this commemoration? What are you aware of that's happening at places other than the National World War I Museum?
Well, you know, in Europe, it's front and center because Europe so was profoundly impacted by World War I in ways that we find hard to even to imagine.
Right.
And so in villages and towns and cities right throughout Europe, it's being addressed in a whole variety of ways in museums, in local ceremonies and commemorative activities that will happen. And we're looking to partner with those places. The Turkish government, for example, are wanting for us to have a stronger Turkish representation in our museum, and we're in conversation with them about that. As I mentioned, we've got an Italian art show and see other programs like that coming to the museum. We're into conversation with the French government similarly.
Hmm.
Similarly, Doran has relationships with curators at the Imperial War Museum. You know, we have an unusual relationship with the Imperial War Museum because we are the second oldest collecting institution in the world of World War I archives, the Imperial War Museum being the first. So we're brother and sister.
Okay. Wow.
And so he has a curatorial relationship with quite a number of people there with loans and so forth.
And Doran, is there a particular item or a particular exhibit that you think is the crowning achievement of the National World War I Museum, something that we should be most proud of?
Well, I think it's really hard to pick out one particular thing because we collect all the nations who were involved in the war. We represent the event as a global historical event, as the cataclysmic event of the 20th century and into the 21st century. And it's funny, people ask me all the time, what's your most favorite object in the museum? And I tell them, well, it depends on what day it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'll walk through the exhibition and I'll see something. I'll say, well, that's really cool. I'm glad we have that here. Or let's see if we can find something that will tell us a better story. So it's really an interesting time for us, especially with special exhibitions and programming to highlight new stories, to highlight particular things and not retell the story, but to show new aspects of the history of the war.
Matt, one of the ways that the city, the museum, was observing the centennial was the formation of the Centennial Commission.
Mm-hmm.
Former Congressman Ike Skelton had been elected chair of that commission and then died a couple months later. Do we know who the next chair of the commission will be?
The next chair has not yet been selected. The commission met again in November, and they are waiting, however, for a new appointee to be made to replace former Congressman Skelton. So we lost a great friend in his passing. So soon that person will be named, and then they'll hold their own election to determine who the chair is, and we're very much looking forward to working with the commission.
I wonder, you know, as you think about the museum more broadly, the centennial is obviously a huge part of your plans for the coming years, but it isn't the only part of the plans. What should we be looking for from the museum in the next few years? How will it change? Does it need to grow more?
Yeah, what we want to do is to really be the people's place in many respects. You know, in the past, the park land was used by lots of families around Kansas City. It fell into some disrepair. All those days are behind us now. The place is in terrific shape. It's used by joggers and families and picnics and weddings and, you know, people all the time. One of the things that strikes me is when I look at iconic photographs of Kansas City, they're almost invariably taken from the Liberty Memorial, from the National World War I Museum. And so that fantastic view is found on the grounds. So we want the grounds to be increasingly a place where
That's
people
right.
come to enjoy, families to be there. And one of the things that we're going to do to contribute to that is that from Father's Day for a week, beginning next year in 14, so the 15th of June of an evening, we're going to have taps at the tower for families to come out, hot summer night, experience the emotion of hearing taps being played as the sun sets, as a way of remembering what happened around World War I and honoring those who continue to serve today.
All I wish we had more time, but thank you so much for being with us. That's Matthew Naylor, the president and CEO of the World War I Museum, Linda Trout, their new director of strategic engagement, who's heading up their centennial celebrations, and Doran Cart, who's been senior curator for many years. Thank you all for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Remember, you can find out more about the museum and about their centennial celebrations at their website, theworldwar.org, or at our website, kcur.org. When we come back, we turn from the world's past to Kansas City's future with a look at the Chamber of Commerce and its Big Five goals. They've checked one of them off the list they announced 2 years ago. We'll hear about that success story, and we'll get a status update on some of the other goals. We'll also find out what priority might be up next for the city to take its place. So stay with us. I'm Brian Ellison. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR.